No matter where you work from these days,
take Jones and Keefe with you on the Odyssey app.
Favorite WEEI.
Ring in the holidays with Have a Mayo Mayo Christmas.
Have a holly jolly Christmas.
One thing I learned from coaches and from Thunder.
I don't know if there'll be snow, but have a cup of...
36 Christmas wishes from your favorite Patriots head coach come together on two CDs to celebrate this joyous time of year.
All right, Hey. That's, you said it, I didn't.
You gave it away this year to save me from tears. I'll give it to someone.
Thundering.
With your paid order of Have a Mayo Mayo Christmas, you receive a free baseball bat to carry around to meetings.
Chestnuts roasting on an open fire.
And cash. Yeah. Ready to burn some cash.
Frost nipping at your nose.
A perfect gift for giving. To order Have a Mayo Mayo Christmas, call 1-800-GROSS-HC.
Look, once those guys cross the white lines, there's nothing I can do for them.
Right,
that we're going to win more than four games?
Yeah.
I'm on record.
You're on record?
Absolutely.
All right, good. All right, good. All right.
That's 1-800-GROSS-HC.
To relive the hits from Gerard Mayo this year in holiday album form. Any, you have a favorite regrettable comment from Mayo this year, Fitzy? It's Jones and Keefe, Fitzy in for Keefe here today. Do you have a favorite regrettable moment or, you know, viral moment from him? One of the comments he had to walk back very famously every Monday with Greg. Anything that jumped out to you specifically that really took the cake?
Oh, God, yeah. Young Thunder. When he called,
you said that earlier. That was, I kind of even overlooked that one. That's true.
I can't shake it. I really can't. Like I told you, I think a lot of fans were immediately out on the entire Mayo administration when he called it. It just, first
young
of all,
Thundercat.
Oh God, don't. It's, it was so cringe. I'm sorry. And I, as a king of cringe myself, who said one in many things I know that have made other people's good sensibilities and senses of humor recoil over time. My God.
I appreciate, you know, Thunder and the organization.
He called him Thunder.
Thunder.
Somebody
not
more
once.
Than twice his age, several times. And you know, everybody, Stacey James et al., met with him immediately afterwards and were like, yeah, that didn't test very well. We're going to go ahead and maybe never say that again. Thanks.
It's
awful. It was terrible.
It was not well thought out, and it was a real not ready for primetime moment from him. I still go back. The AVP one, rather, from last week was bad. You said it. I didn't.
Yep.
And I think that was where a lot of people who were giving Mayo the benefit of the doubt jumped ship. I still think calling the team soft. Like, we talked about this late last week, Fitzy. You didn't mind that.
Mm-mm.
You see how Brian Callahan handled a similar question?
Oh, Brian, is he done swearing at the podium after
I mean, look, it was a little bit was forced, and I think we could nitpick some of the specific things he said.
Holy
but
football guy.
But I'll take his response 1,000 times out of 1,000 over
Mayo's. I think you can kind of shove that one right up your be honest.
Yeah, Fitzy, that was to you. You could shove it right up there. And so, yeah, I'll take that. I'll take that response a million. It's so easy. It's so easy to just be like, yeah, I mean, we lost, but we're not a soft team. Mayo couldn't even do that.
Nope. Nope. I mean, listen, the Callahan thing, when I heard it, I thought, I wonder if Mayo were to talk like this, if he were to just come out one post game and tell, he's like, you know what, Mark Daniels or Andrew Callahan or Phil Perry, hey, Giardi, take that comment and stick it straight where the sun doesn't shine. Because, like, what?
Complete and total bullshit, if you want my honest opinion.
Yeah. Get him.
You know, like, at least, hey, guess what? At least I know what the identity of Brian Callahan and his team are. They're not very talented, but they're a bunch of tryhards.
Yeah,
good.
Look, Brian Callahan may not get a second year in Tennessee. He's been a disaster too, but I'll take that approach 1,000 times out of 1,000 over.
Their quarterback situation is awful.
It's bad. It's bad. Brian Callahan, by the way, beat Gerard Mayo in a related story head-to-head earlier this year. We'll get to some phone calls. 617-779-7937. David is in Medfield waiting patiently. David, hello.
Hi, can you hear me okay?
Gotcha.
Hello, David.
Oh, cool. Hey, thanks very much. And I'm sure this one's been, appreciate the call, like the show. I'm sure this one's been raised before, but I'll just say something and want to hear your guys' response. I think last night was kind of a microcosm of the year. They were aggressive. They threw the ball. May is a fantastic passer. He seems like a guy that's been in the year in the league a couple years more than just a rookie. That good. Not that he doesn't make mistakes, but so they get up to a 14-0 lead. That's fantastic. I go to a bar, start watching, see Buffalo's catching up a little bit, catching up a little more, yep. And then I see they've got the lead, and the Patriots score those points in the first quarter and don't score again until like 3 minutes left in the game. And they show the stats up there. First quarter, 22 pass attempts. And he completed 17, so another great percentage. And then they show somewhere in the fourth quarter, he's 5 of 9. I say, 9 pass attempts?
Yeah, so
they
David,
did it again.
David, it says they don't use May to their full ability. That was a good recap of the game in box score. But they don't use him to his full ability. I agree with that. It was one of the few games they let him really, throw aggressively early on in the game, that deep shot to Booty. We went a whole week against Arizona where they didn't attempt to pass over 10 yards, for God's sakes. So I did like that. And I think Van Pelt, even though he should be safer than Covington and Mayo and even Elliott Wolf in my estimation, I don't think he gets the full amount that you should out of Drake May. And another thing that bothered me, I know this bothered your co-host on Six Rings as well, Andy Hart. Mm-hmm. He just said late last week, yeah, we're not going to do design runs with Drake May unless it's the game on the line or a playoff spot on the line. We want to protect him. And then how many design runs did they have yesterday with May? Like 2 or 3? So that feels wildly inconsistent.
And Hart's big point, the bone he had to pick last night on the postgame show was, it almost makes you think that if you go back to the Arizona game where the play calling was uber conservative and it was obviously driving Jonathan Kraft crazy, that maybe after he made his notes and he met with Mayo, because they have those weekly meetings between the coaching staff and ownership, it makes you wonder if they said, hey, next week, be more aggressive. Like, run the kid. Go for it sometimes. We got nothing to lose. We have to give these fans an entertaining product down the stretch because we're losing viewership. We're losing fandom. And I also, by the way, I'm down there for all those games. If the Patriots have 64,000 people in the seats, then my name is Jimmy Stewart. Get out of here.
So. When it comes to, like, I'm fine with design runs for May, by the way. I think they should do that. But it's just odd to hear the offensive coordinator come out and say, you know, we're protecting him. And, you know, in certain spots we would do it, but we're not just going to do it to do it. And then they do it the next game multiple times where it's noticeable. I wonder if all year Mayo's just been hands off all year. And now it's him or me. At least I thought it was before I read Phil Perry. We'll get to that in a moment. But it's like, it's him or me. I got to scrap for my job, and I'm going to throw Van Pelt under the bus even more. It's like, oh, hey, Gerard, when the Crafts debriefed him on Monday a week ago, why aren't we using design runs with Drake May? Even Drake says he wants to do it after the game, and he said it again after yesterday's game. Oh, that's because Alex wants to protect him. Oh, okay. And then Gerard steps in and says, hey, Alex, you know what? We're going to do some more design runs. And it's almost like he was hands-off all year, and now he was hands-on with this to prove a point that it was Van Pelt's fault for not doing it earlier. Like, I wonder if something like that was at play.
Yeah. Like, it felt like they were told, like, it wouldn't, put it this way, it wouldn't surprise me if there was a they got told what to do type of thing.
Exactly.
To change thing. Like, and so then they did. And like, here, we did that for you. Then it worked. And then they went back to their methodology in the second half. Wouldn't surprise me at all if it was somebody else's game plan at first, and then they went back to what they had in mind for the second half. Wouldn't surprise me at all.
Dan's in Rhode Island. Go ahead, Dan.
Hey there. Hi, Fitz. How you doing?
Hey, Danny. How are you, buddy?
Very good. A couple things. I've never been on board with the narrative about using the last 4 games or whatever to make decisions moving forward. Like, yesterday's game's a perfect example. Yes, they hung with them, and it was a lot closer than we thought. But let's just take it from the Bills' perspective for a minute. They just came off two very high-profile leverage close games. And I just think it was more about them just not being emotionally there, like going through the motions, than it was the Patriots taking it to them. Hmm. You know, I just think that it's a marathon, and emotion is a big part of football. And I just don't think Buffalo just came in thinking we're going to walk over these guys. And we know any given Sunday, like the cliche says, anyone can beat anyone.
Okay, well, Dan, Dan, it's a good point. We haven't framed it this way. Was yesterday more about the Bills overlooking the Patriots or the Patriots, you know, fighting for Jerod Mayo, however you want to put it? Was it more about Buffalo or more about New England yesterday?
You asking me or you're asking Dan?
Oh, I'm asking you, but okay. I would say, and I hadn't thought about it in those terms, mm-hmm. I would say, yeah, it might have been more about Buffalo overlooking them, and then when they realized they had a game, it's not like they blew the Patriots out in the second half, but they
did not.
They controlled the second half.
Yeah, they controlled the second half, but a lot of that control was ceded from the Patriots because the Patriots made the Patriots threw a pick in the front of the end zone. The Ramondre Stevenson coughed up the ball at midfield. Killing the momentum of a drive. They made the boneheaded decision to throw a four-yard a backwards lateral at the four. So I actually don't like this. This sounds very apologist in nature. I don't think the Bills beat the Patriots yesterday by any stretch, Jones. This was the Patriots finding a way to lose that game.
So the better Patriots team lost it.
Oh, absolutely. Mm. And that's what, and then you'll have football hardos and those that have spent far more time watching and analyzing football than I tell you, like, well, that's how it goes. Good teams find ways to win. Bad teams find ways to lose. How do you know the New England Patriots are currently a bad football team? They played well enough to win early on, but then ultimately found a way or ways to lose.
It's fair. Did the Patriots lose it more so than the Bills won it yesterday? With the turnovers, certainly that could be the case. Buffalo wasn't ready to go. And he's right. They came off two emotional games. I was wondering if they had another big game ahead. They had the Jets this week, so I don't think they were guilty of looking ahead to the Jets. But maybe there was a natural letdown there, which is why Vegas knows what they're doing when they set these lines. I didn't see any way the Patriots were covering this weekend. Certainly not winning, but not even covering. I think my official prediction to you, Fitzy, yesterday, we were texting before kickoff, 50-3 was my official prediction.
Yes, it was. And I think you even said it, and it's not going to feel that close.
You know, but that Vegas makes money off people like me every single week. If you're familiar with the Bozo Touchdown Parlay, you know that. Phil Perry had this report yesterday that caught me as, well, odd. Mm-hmm. And I hope he's wrong, but I respect his reporting very much. Phil Perry says, recent opponents felt as though New England's primary issue, and this was going into yesterday's game, was due more to those wearing helmets on the sidelines and not headsets. So it's about Elliott Wolf's roster more so than the scheme and the coaching. Quote from a rival GM, the quarterback, Drake May, looks like the real deal. He just needs a lot of help, especially on the offensive line. Another comment from an opposing offensive coordinator about the defense. The scheme isn't bad. We've seen worse. Their problem is they have one good player, Christian Gonzalez, and a bunch of those guys who played good football for them in the past just aren't themselves right now, which I would say, isn't that coaching? Like, okay, the guy, you're not getting the most out of the guys who have been good in the past. That's probably coaching, but whatever. That's an offensive coordinator and a GM saying, yeah, it's the personnel. It is not about the scheme. He then follows this up and says, speaking to several sources around the league who have experience with hirings and firings at the head coach and coordinator level, for them, there are two paths that seem to make the most sense for the Patriots moving forward. One would be to start over with an entirely new staff, which I would advocate for personally. Mm-hmm. Yep. The other would be to keep all three of Mayo, Covington, and Van Pelt and allow them to try to get them back to contention with a roster that should be able to improve this coming offseason. Now, that sounds crazy, so Phil explains the thinking. He says the thinking in the latter scenario is even if you have designs of swapping out coordinators and keeping Mayo, coveted options for those jobs could be hard to come by. If tethered to a head coach who could be on the hot seat in year two with a roster that appears to still be in need of multiple off seasons of rebuilding, will the next coordinator or coordinators truly be set up for success? So basically, you can fire Van Pelt or Covington, but who's going to take the job to work for what might be a lame duck head coach? There might be more value, according to those around the league, in running it back with the same crew. Fitzy, your thoughts?
Look, no one around here wants to hear it because if you check any of the Patriots' social medias or social medias that mention the Patriots with frequency, they'll tell you that these coaches are likely coming back. And there are cesspools in the comment sections. They are just miserable places to traffic because there is such unmitigated anger towards the organization and the coaches. The bottom line is, Jones, the hard truth is these guys have not been given a chance to fully establish what kind of identity they would have aside from, you know, goofing around with post-game pressers and coaching too conservatively, because all of them are just learning on the fly. They're learning on the fly together without a path for success or a quality NFL roster to coach. And it's a mess. It almost feels a little amateur coming from the previously most dominant organization in the NFL now to a couple of coaches trying to find their way together in like a buddy-buddy sitcom. It's a mess. So we said earlier in the show, I'll say it again, I'll believe this until the season ends and we probably get some sort of statement or email from Robert Kraft to season ticket members and then the media at large. They're going to run it back with these guys, but give them the tools they believe they need to succeed. So it's going to be all in once again next year. And then if they crap the bed, total flush.
Okay. Look, I would not be on board with that approach at all. But I respect the reporting of Phil Perry and those he's talking to. I would rather go for the clean sweep. And I see this in the Twitch chat. It's a good point. twitch.tv/BostonWEEI. You know, did Matt Patricia deserve a second year as offensive coordinator? Like, does everybody, no matter how big of a disaster they are, deserve a second year to go to the Red Sox? Did Bobby Valentine deserve a second year? Like, sometimes, and that's a guy with a much longer track record, so maybe it's not a perfect analogy, but work would be on it. Sometimes it's such a disaster, you don't need to see any more of it. And something tells me you could give Jerod Mayo and DeMarcus Covington and Alex Van Pelt a massive talent upgrade. And they're still going to be in over their heads. But that I can't prove that until they give it to them. That's just my opinion on it. It's been so bad and such a mess in so many different ways. And it's been so much worse than a year ago. And last year was really, really bad. I'm not pining for the days of Bill Belichick. But it's been so bad and such a disaster, I cannot fathom running it back with that group. But the logic is, it's such a bad job and bad situation with a lame duck head coach that no one's going to want to take the job, so you might as well run it back with what you've got.
Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what's going to happen. I don't know what the odds are right now on...
Yeah,
you
put numbers on it earlier. You said 65% they're all back?
I would 2/3, 100%. Yeah. I bet right now if there were gambling odds on it...
So how do they justify all coaches come back? How do they justify that to the public? I get the logic in no one's going to take this job. It's not really an upgrade over Van Pelt or Covington. So just run it back and hope you start at a higher point in year two and give them some talent and it works out. I get that. But how do you justify that to the fan base? Like you gotta take a pound of flesh somewhere. This is going to be the worst season since 1992 for the Patriots. They went 2-14 in 92. They're probably going to win three games this year. Like how do you justify that with a straight face to your fan base that, yeah, we're going to bring back a lot of the players, which is what they did a year ago, and then we're going to bring back a lot of the coaches from this disaster. Like, how do you justify that?
Well, how many coaches got flushed out after 1993 when they went 5-11? They won their last four.
Oh, yeah, after 93. I'm sorry, not 92. After Bill Parcells' first year?
I don't think anyone either.
Maybe they moved around some offensive coordinators early in Bledsoe's career, but yeah, maybe not there. I don't recall. 92, they flushed out the whole thing after that year.
As they should have.
But 93, they at least finished on an upswing. That's not the same as what the Patriots are doing. They've lost five in a row.
No, what I believe you're going to hear from the organization is you're going to hear while this was a tough season, this was always a turnaround or bridge or development season, and we need to, our belief in these guys is the same. Look how many one score games there were. If we give them the infusion of talent, veteran leadership, youth and speed, blah, blah, that they need, we believe next year something special can happen. You heard Mayo yesterday as well. Mm-hmm. Why was Mayo saying at the post game presser, you know, I feel like we're putting together something really special here and I'm proud to be a Patriot? I doubt he received a payment for that. It wasn't like somebody gave him a gift and he had to say that. Like
he knows they're back.
He knows they're here, and so he's trying to make the best of the situation.
Greg Bedard at Boston Sports Journal highlighted a comment from Justin Herbert just a few years ago. Last year, about Brandon Staley. Here's what he said late in the year: everyone would be lucky to have a coach like Staley. He's been an incredible leader
and has the respect of everyone on our team. He's genuine. He's himself. He's been the same person for the last 2 years. That was Staley, who then, I'm sorry, that was 2 years ago. He survived that year and then went 5-9 the following year and got fired. So, right, maybe Drake May sees the writing on the wall and knows this is the case. How much blame is for or is on Drake May yesterday for the loss? We all like him as a prospect. He's a franchise quarterback. I feel good about him. He's one of the only bright spots on the team. But just sticking to yesterday, how much of the blame is on him for the loss and the way he played and turned it over in the second half?
Oh, he gets – he. If any one person has to get – if any one player has to get the most blame, because I still blame a lot of the loss on the coaching style in the second half and turtling when they needed to continue to be aggressive. But if there was one player, you have – I'm going to give more. I'm going to give a whisker more to Ramondre.
I felt you catching yourself there. So Stevenson with the fumble, and he was involved on that play as well.
Yeah,
I would blame May for yesterday's loss, not the record and where the team is and why they're a mess. I wouldn't blame him for all of that, but yesterday's loss, a lot of that's on May. You got to take care of the football. You got to you got to finish off the drive when you're in the red zone. Even though Stevenson could have caught that backwards pass that led to a Buffalo touchdown. You don't have to throw. Like, May does not have to throw it. I know that's the design, but when the lineman whiffs on the block and even a completion, you're going to lose 4 or 5 yards there anyway. You do not have to throw it there. I'm going to blame him for yesterday's loss. Love him as a prospect. I think he's your franchise quarterback. He's the least of their problems in general. But yesterday, I give him quite a bit of blame for that loss. You can jump in here.
Not a great game.
No, not at all. You can jump in here. Great first half. Second half, it came undone. You can jump in here. Jones and Fitzy is in for Keefe here today on WEEI. We got WEEI Afternoons coming your way at 2 o'clock. You'll hear from Drake May on the program today, along with Jonathan Jones, 617-779-7937. That's your phone number. Billy Lanny with all the latest in trending. And when we come back, it's time for Grab Bag.
The exclusive home for Patriots Monday and Friday.
Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
The Patriots have now dropped 5 straight after yesterday's 24-21 loss to the Bills in Buffalo. Pats have 2 games remaining on the schedule, beginning with Saturday's game against the Chargers at Gillette Stadium. Week 16 wraps up with a Monday Night Football matchup between the Saints and the Packers. Kickoff is at 8:15, and you can hear the call of the game right here on 93.7 WEEI-FM, with Westwood One's coverage beginning at 7:30. Right-handed pitcher Walker Buehler and the Boston Red Sox are in agreement on a 1-year, $21.05 million contract, sources tell ESPN. The Bruins and Celtics return to action tonight. The Bees host the Washington Capitals. Puck drop at the TD Garden is at 7 o'clock. And the Seas are in Orlando to play the Magic. Tip-off at the Kia Center is also at 7 o'clock. I'm Billy Lanny. That's what's trending now on WEEI, WEEI.com.
Jones and Keefe.
Jones and Keefe on WEEI.
Get Boston Sports Original on the go wherever you go. Just download the Odyssey app.
It's time for Grab Bag. It's time for Grab Bag.
It's Jones and Keefe here on WEEI. No Keefe today. We have Fitzy alongside, as we do each and every day at this time. We go through and we give you the grab bag. What wonderful singing, by the way, going into the last break, Fitzy. You're getting a lot of love for your final countdown rendition there.
One of my all-time favorite songs, top 5 for my kid, too.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh, nice. He loves that song. Listens to it all the time.
Very, very popular.
It's Europe. It's amazing.
So where are we starting in today's grab bag, Fitzy?
Let's get into the grab bag, my friend. The Boston Red Sox. We haven't talked a lot of baseball on today's program. Red Sox bolster the rotation by signing Walker Buehler to a 1-year, $21 million deal. Of course, he's coming off of the Tommy John surgery. But an excellent postseason where he went 1-1 with a 3.6 ERA, 13 strikeouts over 15 innings, including dropping Doogie for the series winner at the Yankee Stadium. I like the addition, Jones. How about you?
No, so I like the addition as well. I mentioned his name early on in the offseason. I think he pitched very well in the World Series, as you alluded to. He's the right amount of time removed from a Tommy John surgery. This is not, you know, Liam Hendricks. This is not James Paxton. This is not the guy they just signed, Patrick Sandoval. Who now needs to completely rehab and recover from Tommy John surgery. He's going to miss half a year. No. He's already missed his time. He already came back. He saw a massive uptick in velocity in the World Series where he pitched well against the Yankees. He's part of two World Series teams with the Dodgers. I like that part of it. So I like the signing. I'm on board with the signing. I like the player. I think he's been really good in big games in the past. That's one thought. The other thought is it's still only a one-year commitment. And even though it's $21 million and there's incentives in it as well where it could go a little bit higher, it's still only a one-year commitment. So they committed to Chapman for 1 year. They committed to this guy for 1 year. They signed Patrick Sandoval for a year plus, where he's probably not even going to pitch for him in the first year of the deal. And then you get Garrett Crochet, who you have team control with, but it's no real money. Mm-hmm. The Red Sox still haven't done what they promised, which was spend this offseason. And maybe they will. Maybe they'll sign Corbin Burns. Maybe they'll sign Alex Bregman, who I believe, did I read Bradford right? I think Bradfoe said they own like a horse together. Like a racing horse?
What?
Hang on, let me get the tweet from Bradfoe. But I believe that's what I read. They own a racehorse together. Walker Buehler and Alex Bregman. So like maybe there's more money to spend.
Ooh. How about that?
Yeah, they partnered on a colt. That's what that's gotta mean, right? The
they
first 2 days of the
on a colt.
That's illegal in most states. The first 2 days of the Santa Anita Classic meet. Blah 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 blah. Yeah, they own a horse together, and so they're buddies. Maybe that's a sign of things to come, and they'll spend. That's frustrating to me, and both can be true. I like the signing, good player, but the Red Sox still haven't spent any real money this offseason, not yet.
But I do like the rotation next year, though, with Bayo and Hauk, and possibly Giolito returning to form, and Crochet, and now Buehler. They have depth in the rotation. Which is a good thing, but where they go for 2026 and beyond, we'll see, because they got a lot of guys coming up on Prove It Days. Let's see what else is in the bag.
Grandma got run over by a
grab bag. Red Sox, very busy weekend as well, Jones. They traded away Cam Boozer, which is unfortunate. He was sent to the White Sox, a second deal with the White Sox for right-hander Yoiker Fajardo. That's
nice.
Yeah. Nice.
You said it was unfortunate they traded away Cam Boozer?
No, they traded high. I mean, he's just a feel good story.
You're going to miss him.
No one's going to miss him. I'll be honest. I guess that was an unnecessary emotional addendum. Also, the Red Sox signed reliever Austin Adams.
Oh.
So, still a lot of in the grab bag today, we're finding a lot of discount bin moves by your Red Sox.
No, it's stocking stuffers is what these are. They're not the real presents you want to open. They're a little warm up there, as the Red Sox, I guess, are kind of sort of minimally active.
Yeah, that's enough Red Sox talk in the grab bag.
It's beginning to look a lot like grab bag.
Wow.
Every afternoon, Jones and Keefe will keep you entertained every midday with Keefe's Keys and Hot Patriots Takes Two. It's beginning to look a lot like grab bag, grab bag, grab bag.
How about that?
This year.
How about that?
My gosh, and I thought Mrs. Fitzy was the only one who did the singing in the grab bag.
That's Radio Chick from the Twitch chat sent that in.
No way.
Yeah, how about that?
Oh, my voice of a songbird, an absolute angel.
True.
My goodness gracious. Hey, so the college football playoffs, as we mentioned earlier in What Happened, and if you missed that, I would highly recommend you use the Odyssey app, toggle back, and get that segment because it was on fire today. College football playoff got off to a pretty dud-tastic start. Friday night, Notre Dame just absolutely trucked Indiana. Beautiful little setting right there in South Bend. And then Saturday, Texas had no issue with Clemson. Ohio State had very little issue with Tennessee. And I think Penn State was up 38-0 out of the tunnel over SMU.
So, Jones,
it was not close at all. So, it makes you wonder, did the college football playoff committee overthink things? But did they Elliott Wolf it when there was a McConkie available? Should Alabama have been in over SMU?
Well, I mean, it's hard to say no after this weekend, right? I'm a proponent of the college football playoff. I was very excited about it. I was legitimately pissed off at the Notre Dame Indiana game, not only because I bet Indiana, but I'm like, great, this is the first game. Yeah, it was not a good bet. It was the first game. I'm sitting there, I'm watching it, I'm settled in, I'm ready to go. And it was like a beatdown right from the start. Indiana had one brief moment where they had the ball and turned it over, and Notre Dame ripped off a 98-yard touchdown. So it just it set the tone for the whole weekend of a bunch of underwhelming mismatch games. And, yeah, I would say you have a gripe if you were an Alabama fan that your team should have been in. Now, I don't think Alabama would have won any of these games. Mm-mm. And I don't think they had a good body of work that they were like a no-brainer team that should have been in. But in retrospect, after the committee made their decision, would they have been better for this tournament than SMU? Better than this tournament for even Indiana? Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, they probably would have given us
Vandy,
a better game.
You might get in. Yeah, don't lose to two unranked teams, you might get in.
But don't lose to Vandy is correct. Even though that was one of the moments of the year, don't lose to Vandy.
I agree with that. But again, in retrospect, if I want more competitive games, which I do, a team like Alabama, yeah, probably would have helped. Sure.
Which of the games, though, are you most excited about coming up in the college football quarterfinals?
It's the rematch. I mean, there's two. I think there's two great games. Notre Dame and Georgia, I think, are great. And this is another thing they got to rethink. Like, now Boise State and Arizona State, like, those teams should have been playing SMU. Those teams should have been playing Clemson. Part of the reason your games were so mismatched is because you're rewarding conference winners with bye weeks. And now we have Boise State playing Penn State. Is that the matchup?
Yes,
and Arizona State and Texas, those are going to be beatdowns. Those are not going to be watchable. But Notre Dame-Georgia is the runner-up. That should be a very good game. I just sprinkled a little bit on Notre Dame money line in that game. I also think Oregon money line is a borderline no-brainer. They're 2.5-point underdogs, I think, in that game for a team they already beat this year. I get Ohio State looked great against Tennessee. That was at home. I know Oregon beat them at Autzen. It was not on a neutral field, but I would like Oregon in that game. It was a great game earlier this year. It's a rematch, but that's the game I want to see.
Yeah, although I will say I'm kind of looking forward to seeing if Ashton Jeanty, because I'm just so enamored with star power, offensive player, whatever. I want the Patriots to add to their running back room so badly. There's zero chance they would ever take him, but I love watching that kid play. Averages over 200 yards a game.
Move down from two and take Jeanty at like 10? You wouldn't do that?
I would do that. If I could get an offensive lineman and Jeanty in the first round, if someone wants Cam Ward or Shedeur Sanders that badly that they're willing to move up from 13 to 9 up to 2 and give the Patriots the farm, I would do it in a heartbeat. The kids, 210 yards a game? Are you nuts?
So I'm with you on this. Last year I was adamant, and I like Jeanty too. I was adamant that they should stay and pick. I hated the idea of trading down. I wanted to get a quarterback up there. Now that you have your quarterback, I'm very much open to the idea. In fact, I would advocate for the idea of moving back and trying to get, personally, I would want the receiver and the tackle, but if you want another weapon on offense, Ashton Jeanty and a tackle, fine. I'd be fine with that.
All right, let's move
Keith
on.
Keith, better watch out. Jones, better not cry. Lanny, better not pout. We're telling you why. Santa Claus is getting grab bag.
If you heard Jones at the University of North Carolina, it's a hot commodity of a college football program right now. Total DEI hire. They just announced they have a new defensive coordinator.
Yeah?
Steve Belichick.
Oh, what?
Yep.
He's following Dada?
Mm-hmm. I wouldn't believe it.
I was not ready for that. Now, look, I'm sure Wiggy had no thoughts on this, bringing his child into work earlier today and having him ask a Mayo question. So I'm sure Wiggy has no thoughts on bringing your kid to work. But Bill is bringing along all the children to UNC to be D coordinator. Do you think it's a good move for Steve? Like, I think we all knew it was coming. Do you think it's a good move for him to follow his dad, or should he have continued to try to carve out, let's call it quote-unquote his own path? He's still working for Jed Fish, one of Bill's guys. You think that was the better avenue for him, or should he follow Dada?
I think he should have stayed on his own until the time came up. Like, look, he can obviously learn a lot from his pops, but cutting his own teeth somewhere else, and then eventually, like, when Bill's done, like, Steve, the job is yours if you want it, great. But I guess they must love working together. So, you know, good for them. Who am I to tell somebody, no, you can't work with your kid? Like, if they love working together, they love working together. It's fine. I still would have stayed out on my own. Hell of a year for the Belichicks, by the way. Packing up from Nantucket/Foxborough, schlepping all the way out to the Pacific Northwest, and now zipping back down to the Triangle area, all in a calendar year. I'm seeking no sympathy for them whatsoever, but just saying that it's a hell of a year. All right, let's talk some basketball. Grab bag. Ah, Burl Ives, an absolute national treasure. How about the Boston Celtics, who played one of the most uneven efforts of the season, losing the other night to the Chicago Bulls in a game where Coach Joe Mazzulla was so angry about the team shooting about 8% from three-point range. He lost it against the referees. The officiating was pretty terrible. But then again, when you only make 13% of your three-point shots, that's what's going to happen. They come back two nights later and absolutely decimate the Bulls with one of Tatum's, I dare say, Jones,
oh, great game.
Five most impressive performances, 43 points, triple-double. Why don't we see that more often from him?
I don't know. I guess he had a big contingent from St. Louis at the game, a short drive to Chicago, so maybe that was part of it. He needs more of the St. Lunatics there. What I took away from that game, beyond Tatum's individually brilliant play, which was great, 43 points, triple-double, they beat up Chicago in the paint. Like, I mean, that's how they won this game. They didn't shoot even their average, season average on threes, 45 attempted in the game. They dialed it back. And they had a better approach against Chicago. If they did that in the first game and didn't fall in love with the three, they would have won both of them.
Correct. I don't understand why they don't play that more often, because while they are a gifted distance shooting team and Pritchard's having a phenomenal season, they can play bully ball too. They've got the size and flexibility to play almost any way that they want. And I personally, ratings are down. People are complaining about the NBA. I prefer watching that style of basketball over the make it rain threes ahoy style. A couple more stories real quick.
Deck the Halls with Brad Bag.
How about the weekend box office, Jones? I don't know if you made it to the movies this weekend, but if something with a computer animated hedgehog's in it, I got to take my kids to it. Sonic the Hedgehog 3 made its debut, $62 million at the box office.
Is that good? That seems okay.
It's a nice haul.
That's a nice haul?
Yes.
Good for Sonic and Knuckles and Tails. Shadow. Good for all of them. Yeah, Jim Carrey, as I was in this.
Keanu Reeves is the voice of Shadow. Excellent.
Nice.
Excellent, excellent, excellent movie.
It's beginning to look a lot like
Grab Bag. Thank you very much, Stanley Bruno, on the vocals. And last but not least, I checked multiple websites, so I'm going to have to trust what I gathered from the interwebs. Jones, do you know what the top holiday gift is this year?
Oh, no.
Maybe you'll want to grab some of this if you do.
Scratchies.
Yep. Scratches and butts.
Yeah.
Also, by the way, shout out to the greatest name convenience store in the history of time, Columbian Square in Weymouth, Massachusetts. Butts and Bets 2.
Nice.
Not just Butts and Bets. Butts and Bets Part 2. That's the greatest name. The most Massachusetts store of all time.
First Butts and Bets 2 and now Party City. Shame.
Answering all the questions Butts and Bets 1 left on the table. Top holiday gift this year, rechargeable hand warmers.
Nice.
What do you think about that?
I bet I'd be real nervous about ordering those and them catching on fire. That feels like a real hazard. Fitzy, we do have one more, don't we, Nick?
It's time for Jones and Keefe's random.
Brandon Phillips.
Eduardo Nunez.
Curtis Luskanic.
Baseball player of the day.
Oh, that's right. You know how to play along. It is the Jones and Keefe random baseball player of the day. I'll run point on this one. It was a nice nice outfielder who played for a myriad of teams in his big league career. The Atlanta Braves, the Cleveland Indians, the Montreal Expos, Toronto, Texas, Minnesota, Boston, the Dodgers, the Yankees. He was a journeyman. I think you'd know him mostly from his time with the Atlanta Braves.
Can I guess?
You may.
Marquise Grissom.
No, good guess, though.
Damn.
He did spend, as I said, 1 year with the Boston Red Sox in 1994. This man was never an all-star, but he would swipe you some bags. He had a career-high 72 steals with the Atlanta Braves in 1991.
72 bags.
He appeared in two World Series with the Braves.
Otis Nixon.
Otis, my man, Nixon.
He got it!
The Red Sox win!
Way to go, Billy.
Nice job by Billy Lanny. I don't know if we got the fadeaway there. Have you seen the trademark fadeaway move from Billy Lanny? Every time he knocks one down.
The Billy Lanny fadeaway. Nice. By the way, shout out to Billy Lanny, because in our text exchange yesterday, as we were all swapping scores for the game, nobody had Bills Patriots closer than three touchdowns. Billy said, I almost trusted my gut and went full honk and picked the Patriots. You should have trusted the gut, Billy.
Should have trusted the gut.
Sometimes it's tough not to, you know, be a radio guy and like know this is like I have to have a sense of realism when it comes to talking about the team that it's my true. Inner honk wants to come out and like never bet against them. Like I couldn't do it. Like last year I couldn't be the guy who's like, oh yeah, let's lose this game so we get a better pick. Like I don't look forward to Sunday for me to root against the team.
You know what? You never root against Billy when it comes to the random baseball player of the day. He's all over it. Otis Nixon, never an all-star. I was surprised he never made an all-star team.
Wow. Never made an all-star team. Even with 72 swipes?
270 batting average. Stole you a whole bunch. 620 steals in his career. So a nice career there. That's the grab bag every day here on Jones and Keefe. Stay tuned. We'll check in with WEEI afternoons and see what they have coming up. I know it's Drake May. We'll find out what else. Plus, we have the clip du jour next.
AUDACY. Type that into your app search. Then download Jones and Keefe
on WEEI.
You're watching along on twitch.tv/BostonWEEI. Fitzy is getting down.
I love that freaking song. Jose Feliciano.
You know, Arcand, they do the behind the glass draft from time to time on WEEI afternoons. We'll check in and see what they have coming up. He's also a big fan of this song.
It's one of those Christmas songs. The second I hear the first two, three notes, I'm instantly in a better mood.
Well, it was a lovely dance moves, a very festive hat as well. On Fitzy. You can keep watching along on twitch.tv and on YouTube to WEEI Afternoons. We'll see what they have coming up in a moment. But first, our time for our clip du jour, Fitzy. Which, by the way, is the clip of the day, of course. Let's relive our man-to-man-to-man coverage. Three men, 10 questions with Christian Gonzalez on a Patriots Monday.
No, I'm not.
Okay, Christian, when it comes to Christmas gifts, do you wrap your own or do you pay someone to do it for you?
I usually have somebody do it.
Nice. All right, this has been a big discussion on this talk radio station and throughout the country. Do NBA players, in your opinion, shoot too many threes?
Let it fly.
Let it fly. Okay. I'm not sure if you're a big holiday movies guy, Christian, but maybe the most iconic line of all time, no man who has friends is a failure. Is that true or false?
No man who has what?
No man who has friends is a failure. Is that true or false?
False. True. I don't know. I never heard that before.
Okay, it's one or the other. What was the one Christmas gift you always wanted as a kid but never got?
Probably some shoes or something.
Some shoes. Mine was the Ninja Turtles pizza flipper van. I never got that. I was real distraught.
It's true.
That's a true story.
I always wanted an easy bake oven. Scented candles, totally lit or just not it?
Yeah, I like them. They're cool.
Lit. Have you ever seen Pocket Money on Nessun?
What?
Pocket Money is a very popular show on Nessun. Have you ever seen it?
Nah.
Ooh, it was good.
Yeah, questionable host. Christian, re-gifting, acceptable around the holidays, yes or no?
One more time?
Re-gifting. Is it acceptable to re-gift around the holidays? You know, get a gift and then give it to someone else.
Yeah.
When is the appropriate... I'm sorry. Keep going.
No, you're good.
When is the appropriate time, Christian, to take down all your Christmas stuff? Tree, decorations, all that. When's the appropriate time to do that?
After New Year's.
Wait till New Year's? Okay. Start the New Year off right. And Christian, when you go to the movies, smuggling in your own food and drink, is it cool every time or is that a total crime?
You always got to take your own stuff.
Yeah. We do. That's what the Jones family does. We've been getting away with it for years, sneaking in candy.
You know, I ever tell you, I told Keith on the night show, I used to worked at a movie theater, Entertainment Cinemas on Hancock Street in Quincy, RIP, great place. I used to love cleaning up the movie theaters only to see what the ushers that were asleep at the wheel would allow people to bring in. And the one time I cleaned the big movie theater, I think it was like Presumed Innocent or something, Wayback Machine, was playing. I found an 18-inch large cheese pizza.
Nice!
To which I had to wonder, how big was the trench coat that somebody was wearing that they were able to smuggle in a whole large cheese pizza?
How old were you when you were working there, like a high schooler?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, high school job. Maybe it was just a high schooler looking the other way. Like, I feel like I never worked in a movie theater. Mm-hmm. You know, you have
best
to have
job ever.
A population to take advantage of that in northern Vermont. But, yeah, I would imagine I would look the other way on things like that. I'm like, you want to bring in pizza? Whatever. It's my summer job.
What's the Jones family key snack sneak in?
Well, the kid likes Sour Patch Kids.
Yep.
It depends. I still like a Junior Mint at the movies. There's something about a Junior Mint at the movies I like. Mm. You're saying no?
All-timer.
Oh,
all
good.
Time. Junior Mint popcorn and a Cherry Coke, that little flavor run around right there, that little combo is elite.
Yeah. I can't smuggle in my own popcorn, so you do got to get the popcorn there. But yeah, I'll smuggle that in. But Christian Gonzalez, at the very beginning, he said he has not done his Christmas shopping. Much like me, I'm no Fitzy, very prepared and very in front of it. I actually got to run and get a little Christmas shopping done. So we'll normally do the crossover here with WEEI Afternoons, brought to you by the 99 Restaurant. I know they have Drake May on the show today. I know they have Jonathan Jones on the show today as well, so stay tuned. See what those guys have live from Gillette Stadium. Fitzy, it was fun. Merry Christmas to you. Merry Christmas to all our listeners out there. I'll be talking to you in the new year. Fitzy, I'm assuming they can hear you a little bit here in the next week or so.
Yes, sir. I will be on tomorrow morning, 6 to 10 with the Shime Time. Then, of course, the day after Christmas, 6 to 10 with Bradfo.
Okay.
So it's truly the gift that'll just keep on giving.
Get some Fitzy in your lives. Everybody, again, have a great holiday, and we will talk to you in the new year here on WEEI.
Thank you, guys. That was fun.